Well, it's great to be with you guys today, and I just want to say a special thank you to all of you who have been a part of the Cannonball initiative of generosity through the Eastlake Church Network. My wife, Brenna, and I would have never been able to be trained and equipped as we have been over the last many months. We've been able to live down in San Diego and, you know, be able to have a place to stay and have gas in our car and food on our table for our family. My wife and I have a two-year-old little girl. This is actually my wife, Brenda, and our little girl, Eliana Joy. And what's up, girl? I love you so much. You're so fine. So is your mom. You know, we just really are so fortunate to be a part of the Eastlake Church Network. And I just want to say a real special thank you again. Like, I'll never get to come to your home and tell you myself, but from my family to your family, thanks for being sacrificial and generous in your giving. You may never meet the families that we're going to reach in our area of Southern California that we're going to. You may never get to know their stories, but your generosity will always be extended into our ministry, and those lives will be changed directly because of what you've given. And so we're, you know, living, breathing examples of that. So thank you so much. I want to let you... Check. Sorry, I was like, I feel like a ringing. Did you guys hear a ringing in your ears? Because if you didn't, I have issues. I have issues anyways, so the ringing has nothing to do with it. Our first ever Christmas was in San Diego, and we didn't know what to do. We didn't have any traditions. And so we asked Pastor James Grogan, hey, what do we do in San Diego? Like, what is it that we can do to, you know, have some family time and to connect? He goes, you need to go to the Hotel Del. I guess that's like slang for Hotel Del Coronado. That's what the locals call it. So he goes, go there. It's like you stepped out of a Christmas movie. There's a beautiful Christmas tree, lights everywhere. There's snowmen. There's a skating rink. I mean, it will be an incredible experience for you. And I said, okay, great. I can't wait to do this. And as you can just see, my wife, she's Latina, and her whole family was there with me, and that's going to be important in just a moment. We went in there, and so my sister-in-law's there, and her four-year-old and two-year-old, and then my other sister-in-law is there as well, and she's a senior in high school. So we get there, and we pull up. If you've ever been there before, the overhang is kind of there, and we pull to the far right, and I'm letting my wife and my daughter out as a result of the fact that it's cold. And I'm like, hey, why don't you guys get out and go inside real quick? And as we're doing that, there's this lady walking by, and she looks like right into my window. And as she looks into my window, she is like looking like right into my soul. Like it was like she was looking like right at my face. And I don't know how you people in Venice like refer to people like this. I don't know what you would really call what she was. She was like drunk. So, and I think she thought the window was down because she looked right into my face and she goes, nice parking job. Now, you don't know me that well, so let me just share a little bit about myself, okay? I grew up in the East Bay of San Francisco, Oakland, okay? And there's still a part of me, though I love Jesus now and I do my best, that is still from Oakland inside. And every now and then, Oakland Chris likes to come out, and on Christmas night, he wanted to play. And so I leaned out my window and I was like, ma'am, just dropping off the wife and child here, women and children first, as they always say, you know. Anyways, you have a good night. Take care. And I'm thinking that should be it, right? Nice little dose of sarcasm. We should be fine. And she turns around and starts mammering something at me. And like, she's like, nah, nah, nah. And to my ever living shame, I leaned out. Oakland Chris came out. And I'm like, you know what? Just walk. Walk, 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 walk. I literally did the two finger thing like this right here. Sorry, Lord. It gets worse. This other lady starts yelling at her, and I swear they were, like, going to fight. And I was just like, whoa, my wife is like, man, Merry Christmas. Where are we? And I was like, I don't know. I don't know why we're even here. And so she gets out. I go park the car. We come back in. And then my sister-in-law is like, hey, where do we need to go? Now, this is where it's a little unique, okay? I don't know how y'all are. I just know that I grew up, you know, around a lot of culture, and there are some cultures in my experience that have a little bit more of a tendency to believe that the Illuminati is real and running the whole world. That like Jay-Z and Beyonce are like running everything, okay? And there's certain symbols that they see out there. You know what I'm saying? And there are certain ones that are supposed to be the right way and things that shouldn't be. So I say, why don't you go inside this beautiful hotel and let the kids see this beautiful Christmas tree? I'm sure it'll make you feel all warm inside and just make us want to just go and celebrate the birth of our Lord and Savior. As she walks inside to look at the star on top and to see the bright illuminating star like the night sky when Jesus was born, the large Christmas tree was upside down. And I was like, isn't that like a satanic symbol, she says? And I'm like, I don't know. And I'm like, man, maybe the Illuminati's real, dude. Why is the Christmas tree upside down? Why is the star? What is going on here? I'm like, this is bad. I'm like, let's go out. So we go out. We get hot chocolate. Now we've got the hot chocolate. Things are getting better. And then at that point, I'm like, my sister-in-law is like, hey, can we go ice skating? I'm like, I guess we could try that. Let's do it. So we get two sets of ice skates. She's a senior in high school. And $175 later, we're sitting down with our skates. And then I get ready to put my feet, and I look down into them, and then this thought comes across my mind. Like, I don't know about how many of you in here, I know there's a few in every bunch, are not feet people. Like, you have feet issues, right? Like, when it comes to, like, someone snuggling on the couch, and they try to put their feet underneath your, you're like, no. Like, this is the no-go zone. I don't want your feet here. Okay? Can anyone testify that they're not feet people? Okay, I knew. Okay? There's always a few. And I didn't know that I was not a feet person until I thought about whose dirty, nasty, funky, toe jam infested, gangrene having, sweated out feet have already been in these skates and soaked their grime into the walls of these skates. And these people think that a spritz of Lysol fixes it. They don't fix it. So I look down and I think, we got to do it. And I sledge my feet in there and they squish around and I get out on the ice skates and I'm bad. I don't ice skate. It's not my jam, right? So like I'm out there and I'm like terrible. I'm like on the wall, right? But I see this guy zipping around and he's got like blue jeans and a white shirt on and he's going around like he's Brian Boitano, man. I mean, he's just getting after it, which everyone under 35 does not know how funny that joke was. But trust me when I tell you that joke was funny. And someone's Googling right now, like, who is Brian Boitano? And so he's going around, and I get kind of confident. Guys, I don't know how you are. You ever seen a guy doing something that you kind of all of a sudden start to think, like, that's not that hard. I can do that. Like, that has gotten so many a man into problems, and it did on this day for me. And I looked at him. I thought, I'm going to try. So I get off, and I'm terrible at the turn. So I'm, like, sketching the turns, like, one leg at a time. And then he did this thing where he goes into the turns, and he does this, like, crossover move, right? And I'm like, oh, I could do that. I'm going to try the crossover move. So I start going, and I do one crossover, and it's like, woo! You get some speed. I'm like, oh, that was, woo! I felt it, right? And I'm like, so then I get to the next one, and I did two crossovers. I'm like, oh, this is, now I'm getting confident. I start blazing down the sides. Man, I'm crossing over the sides like I'm Blades of Glory, and I'm feeling it, right? The wind's blowing in my face. Man, it's beautiful. I can see all kinds of people on the side. They're chanting my name. Like, there's lights. There's snowmen. It's like this beautiful moment, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I heard this sound, and it's like, that's the sound. That was the sound of the ice skate and sketching out that I wasn't talented enough to do. And that was the last sound I heard before I went full-blown Superman. Now, like, when you're 9, you fall all the time. So you're used to it. You emotionally accept that you're falling. But when you're grown, we don't fall anymore. I'm not used to falling. So I'm like not really believing. I'm like not in touch emotionally that what's happening is happening. So I'm like, I'm fine. This is going to be great. I'm okay. This won't hurt. Ice is not that hard. I'm sure I'll recover. And then I just see everyone on the sides booing me. There's this 9-year-old little girl. She's like, you suck in slow motion. I'm like, oh no. You ever hit something so hard as a grown person that all the air leaves your chest and you make that really loud sound like, right? That's what it did. Ice cake spread up my face like this. And I was just laying there on the ice like in a broken mess of a puddle of pain. And the first thought that came to my mind was like, Pastor James, I hate you. And then the second thought that came to my mind was, this is not how I thought Christmas was going to go. This was not my expectation. This is not what I was looking for, right? And here's the deal. Like, that doesn't just happen to me on Christmas, right? Like, this happens in life. I started thinking about it today, and it's like, this happens for you. Some of you, in fact, maybe you're not falling down on the ice, but there's parts of your life that feel like they are. right? Like some of you right now are involved in a relationship, in a marriage that has this stuff that's like going different than how you thought it would, right? It's not going the way you expected it. You expected it to be so much better and it's not. Some of you have been trying to have children. You haven't been able to like start your family. And so you expected to start the family and now you can't. It's frustrating. This beautiful part of your marriage is now difficult, painful, even emotionally challenging. Others of you, there's this part of life where you thought would get so much better with a new job, right? Or new a raise or finances would bring a new opportunity, but you've got new money and still got the same old problems and you're not sure what to do about it and how it got that way. For others of us, it's like you've got a relationship you've mended with someone in your family and you thought like, man, if I could just mend this relationship, things will get better. But now that relationship still has challenges because there's still issues there, and though you got back together, now you're trying to figure out, how do I deal with like this pain? How do I deal with this hurt? How do we manage what's going on in this area of my heart? And others of us, it's God. You know, it's like last year was supposed to be the year that you and God were going to work on some things or get connected, and one way or the other, you got sidetracked. You got knocked kind of off the path. What do we do when what we expected life to be all of a sudden is different and it's almost choking out the life in our hearts, right? It feels like, man, I don't know what to do with my teenager. I'm not sure what to do with this, with my career. I graduated college or I'm pursuing my dream and yet it's not fulfilling or it's not working or I'm not getting opportunities or I'm working in an environment that seems impossible. I don't know what to do with my boss. I don't know what to do with these coworkers. I'm not sure what to do. I have a lack of opportunity. I'm super talented. I'm trained. I'm equipped. And yet it's not happening for me. What do we do when what we expected is so much worse or different or less than what we had hoped for? And what we expected and what it actually becomes is like, man, this is hurtful. This is difficult. This is painful. And the great thing about God is that God knew that we were going to go through this stuff. So he put scriptures inside of the Bible and stories and narratives and principles so that we can look into them and say, okay, what do we do? And that's why in this series, we've been talking about how do we re-engage God. In the first week, we talked about how do we re-engage God upward, right? How do we connect to him? And that really connects us to our whole theme of this entire series. The big idea has been we can re-engage upward, inward, and outward by understanding we are loved. By understanding, we are loved. The series theme verse was 1 John 4:19, and let's read this out loud together if you don't mind. 1 John 4:19, ready, begin. We love because he first loved us. And we learned that this means that we respond to God's love. Jesus in the lineup of world religions and God stands alone because he's the only God that extends love first before you get your act together. He's the only Jesus, he's the only God that says, hey, you don't have to get it all dialed in before I'll love you. In fact, I'll go first. I'll love you before you love me. I'll love you before you understand me. I'll love you before you care about my ways, before you understand them. I'll set the table. I'll invite you to come in. You don't have to. But if you choose to, it's there for you. This is so different. You don't have to earn your way to God's acceptance. You don't have to try to like get him to approve. He's like, I love you in Jesus. I accept you in Jesus. Like I welcome you already. I extend it first. I loved you first. And then we can naturally respond to him. Today's big idea is this, is that God's love overflows in outward love. What does that look like though? That's our big idea. We want to unpack that a little bit. We're going to look into a couple things that Jesus said, and we're going to look into a couple things that a few other writers said that really help us understand, how does it work then? If I love God because he first loved me, but then there's this outward flow and an outward expression, what can that look like? One of the famous leadership teachers, his name is John Maxwell, and he said it this way, we teach what we know, but we reproduce what we are. We teach what we know, but we reproduce what we are. Meaning, we could say the stuff we think. We could tell people what we believe. We can say, well, this is what I believe, or this is what I think about God or Jesus or whatever. But the reality is we're going to reproduce in other people, in our families, in our marriages, in our children, in the people who look to us for inspiration. We will reproduce in the people who follow our lead, not what we think, but like actually we reproduce who we really are. And that is the outward expression of what we believe about God. Why don't you go ahead and fill this in your outline? It's we give what we've received. We give what we've received. In essence, you can't give what you don't have, right? Like if somebody needs $20 and you've got $5 in your pocket, you can't give them what they need. Emotionally speaking, you can't give somebody something you don't have. If somebody needs from you emotionally and you don't have it, you can't give it to them. No matter how much you love them, you can't give somebody something that they need that you don't have. So the first place we have to go to work, as we learned last week, is inward, because you can't give an outward expression of something that you don't have. If somebody is like, man, I need to know about forgiveness, but you're still angry at your dad, you can't teach somebody about forgiveness. If somebody needs to learn how to manage their finances and how to be a good steward of what God gives them, but you're constantly in debt, you have a bunch of store cards ran up and they're maxed out limits and you're only ever paying like minimum charges and like you've not learned how to manage money, guess what? You're not going to be able to teach anyone how to manage their money better because you don't manage your money very well. And so until we learn the things that are healthy for us, good for us, reflections of God's wisdom and of our relationship inward and upward, the outward flow will always be blocked by our inability to really actually live out the outward expression. And this is something that Jesus argued even with the Pharisees, right? So in Jesus's day, there were these religious leaders that like to tell everyone kind of like, here's how you need to know God. And they had this really complicated list of rules that was incredible and amazing and beautiful in its own right, but they had gotten lost from the intentional and the original meaning. And now all of a sudden they're arguing constantly, and Jesus comes into this space and it's like, you know, you guys all talk about loving God. You guys all talk about knowing God, but like your actions are so different than the love of God. So it doesn't really actually work. Like you say that you love God, but you don't live that you love God, because the things that God loves, you don't love. You don't love his people. You don't love broken people, and you don't love his ways. It's so much easier for us, by the way, to say, well, yeah, we need to love broken people and love the lost and love hurting people and have grace and mercy. True, that is a big part of the expression of God's heart. But another part of God's expression of his heart is not just to love broken, hurting people, though that is a part of Jesus's love that has gotten lost for years in churches. However, another part of loving the heart of God is not just loving the people that have been forgotten, but also loving the ways of God. God's ways, he wants us to love. Why? Well, the same way me, I got a little 2-year-old. I want her to love my ways and to trust my ways. Why? Because I know that if she puts her hands on something hot, it'll burn her hand. I know that when my wife brings home like fiery hot Cheetos with lime and my daughter wants to try them for the first time, like I need to slow the bus up, okay? It's like, honey, you need to know, muy caliente. And so she's like, oh, I was, and then mommy throws a few down. I'm like, yeah, but mommy's full Mexican, you're half. This is different, okay? You know the rules. And so as a father, like I want to make sure she knows, look, daddy doesn't have random ways just because dad's like, you know, some dad who wants to sit on a couch and a chair and just boss everyone around so everyone follows what I say. That's not love. That's not God. When God says he has a way for you, it's not because he's like sitting on some mountain or cloud and he just wants to like oppress you with his way. It's because he's a loving father and his way is best for you and he wants what's best for you and way more than I could ever understand how much I want for my daughter. One of the writers, he followed Jesus around, his name was John, and he talked about this idea of reflecting the love that we have for God here, but to reflect it out here. And one way that we see this is in logos, right? I'm going to throw a few logos up on the screen, and you, as soon as you see it, yell out what you know it represents. Here's a couple of them. Ready? Go. Somebody said losers. You want to put money on that there, Pastor? We're not recording that, right? I'm just kidding. I'm not a betting man. Vikings. Losers. That one is very true. Okay, next one. Not from San Diego. Who's that? Who's that? Oh, sorry, that's because I'm aware of the next. What's this one? Oh, champions right now. Yeah, I'm going to win a few more, too. That's right. I hope you guys enjoy the 80s. Weren't they good? Okay. I love that. So I love that you guys are like stopped going for team name and just went general sport. We're like, that's soccer. I don't know. Got nothing. But that's got to be those football people. All right. How about that's Barcelona. Next one. Is it Madrid?
You said it so confidently, you made me believe it. It is Madrid, sir. What do we have from Johnny? Nothing. High five. That is it, right? Like, these are like professional Spanish league soccer teams, right? And they reflect it, and like their fans act like they are the fans of these things. I mean, when you meet a Raider fan, you know a Raider fan, right? Because they've been in prison. Oh, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. They haven't all gone to jail. All of them. Some of them never got caught, you know? That's what it is. I'm from Oakland, so I could talk about Oakland Raiders, okay? Soon to be Vegas Raiders. And so we've got certain things that we understand about this. Here's the reality. How about the way we look? He's a Raider fan. He's like, I'm out of here. I'm just kidding. I'm just playing, dude. I'm just playing. You can leave. It's fine. Now I'm going to stare at you, though, the whole way. What's in that red cup, by the way? What's going on? I'm just playing. Sorry. You'll probably never invite me back. But so while I'm at it, you know, it's like when Jesus like speaks to us about like, okay, how are we doing at being not a logo, but how are we representing the idea of who Jesus is to this world? When the world watches my life, watches your life, does it look like what Jesus intended it to? And do you really ever express it? Or is it just some internal quiet thing you keep? Because that's, although it's beautiful and it's great, but it's not really what Jesus teaches. What's the point of having the answer to something if you never share it with anyone? Right? Like if you get the cure to cancer and you're just like, yeah, I'm going to sit on this. What? Like, no, you help other people. You got the cure to the soul issue that people have in their heart, the disconnect from a loving God. They can't forgive. They can't self-forgive. They can't self-help. They can't self-fix. They have the all-powerful God available at any time to meet their need. And we're just like, yeah, sounds really great. It's good for me. Hope you'll figure it out someday. We're supposed to be the expression of that. So John writes about it like this. In 1 John chapter 4, verse 15 through 16, he says this. Now, if anyone acknowledges that Jesus is the Son of God, then God lives in them and they live in God. And so we know and rely on the love God has for us. God is love. So whoever lives in love lives in God and God in them. We love because he first loved us, verse 19 through 21. Whoever claims to love God and yet hates a brother or a sister is a liar. That's pretty strong language from the Bible, wouldn't you agree? Like, we're like in an age where we're like, hey, don't ever say anything honest. It's like, that's pretty honest, pretty straightforward right there. Whoever says they love God, claims to love God, yet hates a brother or sister is a liar. For whoever does not love their brother and sister whom they have seen, they cannot love God whom they've not seen. And he has given us this command, not suggestion, command. Anyone who loves God must also love their brother and sister. So if we love God upward and we learn to allow God to love ourselves and love us and we love him inward, but we do not love others outward, then we don't have love. A famous writer and even pastor, some of you know him, maybe some of you don't. His name is Rick Warren. And he said something about this that is brilliant that I'd like to read for you. He said it this way. Our culture has accepted two huge lies. The first is that if you disagree with someone's beliefs or lifestyle, you must fear or hate them. The second is that to love someone means you agree with everything they believe or do. And both are nonsense. You don't have to compromise convictions to be compassionate, and you don't have to agree on everything in order to love. Jesus's love does it perfectly. He allows us to be able to disagree, to not see eye to eye, and yet to carry ourselves with a type of dignity and love and an expression of love that shows that we belong to him. And as we look in our world today, there's a need for that from the church. Because too often what happens is the church is learning from how the world says that we ought to disagree, that we don't know how to do it anymore. We don't know how to civilly disagree with someone. We don't know how to biblically do it. We don't know how to do it in a way that Jesus has taught us. Now, Jesus was asked a question that he was asked actually a couple different times. What's the most important command? And I want to talk about this. Matthew 22, this is what it says. One of the guys came up and said, teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Let me pause right there. The law in Jesus's day was called the Mosaic Law, written by a guy named Moses. Now, in our Bible and Christianity, that's in the Old Testament. And it's found in Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. That's where the old Mosaic Law is found. Mosaic law had 613 laws that helped us know how, help them know, how are we supposed to know God? How do we have right relationship with God? How do we stay in right standing with God? Then because of humanity and selfishness and sin, we would break those rules. And then there was other rules within that 613 that would help you get back into right relationship with God. So it was like, here's how you have it, and here's how you get back into it. Here's how you have it, here's how you get back into it. So Jesus comes along, and he's this new teacher, and he's got this new covenant, and he's starting to point people not to this law, but actually to himself. Not to a set of rules, but to a relationship. And now it's kind of different. They're like struggling with like this new idea of what it is. And all of a sudden, one of the guys comes up and says, hey, what? Out of all the 613 in the law, what's the most important one? And Jesus reduces it down to two very famous, well-known ones. And he says this, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and the greatest commandment. And then he says a phrase that's really unique. And the second is like it. Now, pause right there. The second is like it. Jesus has equated loving God with something else. In the history of religious and talk about knowing God, in the history of relationship between God and man, this is new teaching. The people listening to Jesus would have been like, whoa, 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 whoa. Are you about to equate something else? Like, what else is there? It's like loving God is it. Loving God is the most important thing. Didn't you just say it was the greatest? Yeah, I did. But then I put this other statement. And the second is like it, equal to. Okay. Love God with everything you have, which he's quoting from the law. That's Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4. He quotes the old law and he says, this is what it is. And then he quotes the next one. He says, the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. And then he says this. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commands. That means to a good Jew in his day, who was his audience, he was saying, you could get all 613 done if you do these two. And guess what? They're equal to each other. You must love God with all your heart, with all your soul, your emotions, your mind, the way you handle your stress, the way you handle being accused, the way you handle when you're wronged, the way you handle when you're frustrated, your soul. You have to love them with your mind, your heart, your soul, your strength. I want you to love. Why? Because that's most important, because you don't have what it takes to forgive some of the things that people do to you. You don't have what it takes to know what you should do next sometimes because the problems are bigger than you. You don't know have what it takes to deal with a boss or an environment or a work culture that's so toxic, and yet you have to go there to get your paycheck. It's bigger than you. If you could self-help, you'd self-help already. If you could fix and forgive and get your habit out of your life and never deal with that addiction again, it'd be gone. But guess what? Some things are bigger than you and require a bigger love and a bigger power than you have. And Jesus says, this is why loving me first, loving God first is primary. And then second is like it. You have to love your neighbor as yourself. And then he goes on and he talks about who's the neighbor. And it's like, well, he talks about the Samaritan, and the Jews and the Samaritans couldn't stand each other. He goes, that's who you need to love. Wait, what? I gotta love who? You gotta love people who aren't like you. See, Jesus knows that you and I don't need his help to love people that we like because they're like us. Because every one of us likes ourselves. We love our opinions. We're in love with the stuff we think. I love when people agree with me. I really think they're special kind of people. It's like, man, you know what? I like him. Why do I like him? I don't know. He reminds me of myself. She's wonderful. I love her style. Yeah, she kind of reminds me of me. This is what we're good at. We naturally can love people like us. You know who's hard to love? Is the people who left you, who hurt you, who lied about you, who betrayed you. It's hard to love those people. People who you don't understand, who are culturally different than you, that when they do what they do, it kind of gets on your nerves or makes you feel afraid if you're in the wrong part of town at the wrong part of night. Now, all of a sudden, it's like, wait, I don't know how to love those people. And Jesus says, look, you don't have to have all those people over for dinner. You don't have to have, you know, like people who have hurt you, but you can't hate them. You don't get to hate them and say that you're branded by me. You have to learn to love those people and to forgive for those people. And one of the telltale signs is, can you pray for them? Can you pray for them? Because if you can't pray for those people, that's a sign that something's broken inside of you that Jesus wants to heal. And he says that will help the outward flow be healthier than it is. And so when we look at this now, we can see what Jesus wants us to really be all about. If you don't mind, you could write this down. The main thing we're learning to do in this life is to love. That's the main thing we're doing. We're learning to love, and that's what Jesus wants us to do, to be an expression of love to this broken world. And the last real final thing for us to understand is what it means not just to do that as an individual, but what does it mean to do that as a community of faith, a community of believers, a community of people walking this journey out right here in Venice? What does it look like for Venice Church to do that? Because here's the reality. This city needs this church. There are people that are not yet here, that are broken, that are hurting, that are in busted up lives and busted up relationships, that have no hope and are contemplating suicide and thinking about divorce and thinking about cheating on and getting up in messed up affairs. They're thinking of lying on their on their bosses. They're thinking of stealing money. They're messed up thinking of shortcuts to try to fix it because they don't know Jesus. They don't know hope. They don't know forgiveness. They don't know what many of us have experienced. And guess what? This church is the hope to their lives. They just haven't heard it yet. Because maybe some of us haven't expressed it in a way that grabs their attention. Say, the way you talk about the boss when the boss is the way the boss is different than the rest of us. What is that? The way you deal with disagreements with your spouse is different. I never hear you just bag on him or bag on her when we all get together. The way you deal with your money, you're never stressed out about money. And it's like you manage it, you save portions. It's like you save. I hear you give to your church and then you live on like this other rest. I want to learn what you seem to know. You are living a life of an expression of something connected to bigger than what I know. And the reality is this city is looking for this church. But is this church looking for the city? Are you out there looking to live in examples and ways for people to say, okay, that is a brand, that's a mark of something bigger than me? The way that maybe we could say it is this, if you don't mind filling this in, the church loving outward is God's plan A for changing the world. The church is God's plan. It's plan A for changing the world. This is plan A. And guess what, gang? There is no plan B. This is it. Jesus said, I will build my church and the gates of hell won't be able to stop it. Nothing can step to a church doing church right. When a church functions the way Jesus thought it up, he's the originator of the church. And when the church does it right, man, it's powerful. It's beautiful. It's poetic in motion. It's strong. It's fierce. It's amazing. It's community. It's unity. It's liberty. It's freedom. It's redemption. It's hope. It's life. It's all of these things when we do it correctly. And when we live it out, then people can look and say, I want a part of that because this is it. Jesus didn't come up with plan B. He said, plan A, the church takes the world, the hope that I have given them through my life. What would it look like this week for us to do that? What would it look like at work for you to live different? What would it look like to text someone, to forgive someone, to say, you know what? I've got to love my neighbor. I've got to love you, and you're different. You vote different than me, and I'm used to hating people. Like, I don't even understand how you could vote different than me. Okay, can you pray for that person sincerely? Can you still express love and dignity and respect to them? Because this world is looking for how to do that and they don't know how to do it. And Jesus told us how. He said, you got to love me first because your love isn't good enough to love people that difficult, but mine is. Because you know why? Because I love you and you're pretty difficult. Talking about me, not you, but a friend. I want to take a moment and pray for you this morning, if you don't mind. Would you bow your heads and close your eyes today? Jesus, I thank you so much for your word, the truth in it. And I thank you, God, that you want us to learn how to express your love to this broken world. I pray, Lord, that we would allow you to come in and to rearrange some of the disordered parts of our heart. God, I pray if there are things that are out of order, where there are points we want to make more than we want to make the relationship better. God, if some of us are in arguments today because we'd rather be right than to get the relationship right, God, I pray that you would help us to allow you to address that kind of pride and remove it. I pray today, Lord, if there are areas of our lives where we're not living out the brand, the mark of someone who says they love you, God, would you show us where that area is today? And then, God, I pray for this city. I pray that this church, God, would impact this city this week. And this year, 2018, would be marked, God, by new people coming in here, God, that would experience the hope that we have, that we sing about, that we're learning about. And that when we do that, Lord, we would see new lives that would learn that you loved them first and they could respond. That, God, that you want to love them on the inside and change those things. And, God, then the outward flow of that will be a love to people that normally the world doesn't love. It's people who are different than us that we are on opposite ends of the spectrum of. But when we love them, God, it will show this world the way I believe, Jesus, you wanted love to look. And I pray these things for this church in your name, Jesus. Amen.